Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
It's a beautiful Thursday morning across the country, unless you happen to be an Atlanta Braves or an LA Dodgers fan. Now, I get up early, right? The alarm goes off at 4:30, 4:20, 4:15, depending on the day. Be honest with you, I fell asleep last night. First, we had the debacle if you're a Braves fan. My son gets out of school. He's been excited all day for Game 5 of the Braves. I talked about the fact that the Braves have bad luck in the postseason with him. They give up 10 runs in the first half of the inning. And I'm doing Lock It In live on television on FS1. And then I walk downstairs and I see him and he's just crushed. Crushed beyond belief. Like, why did the Braves have to ruin today? I mean, you know what it is when you're 9 years old and your team loses. And I'm like, I know, this is what happens with the Braves in the postseason. A stat for you on the Braves in the postseason, and we're going to get to the Dodgers, don't worry. The Braves have now lost 10 consecutive postseason rounds. That matches the Chicago Cubs for the longest such streak in Major League Baseball postseason history. Now, at least the Braves streak only goes back to 2001. The Chicago Cubs' 10 straight streak went from 1910 to 1998. So there was an entire generation of Cub fans that were born, lived, and died, and never saw their team actually win a postseason baseball series. So that at least is not as bad as it could be for the Braves, but they're probably going to break this record next year and make it 11 consecutive postseason rounds. But that's the Braves. I honestly feel like giving up 10 runs in the first inning is almost an easy, it's more embarrassing to lose that way, but I feel like it's an easier way to lose than what happened to the Dodgers. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I was watching the Dodgers. It seemed like they were cruising. I had the game on, and what often happens when you get up early in the morning, I bet there's a lot of you out there too. I fell asleep. I completely fell asleep. I think in like the sixth or the seventh inning, the Dodgers seemed like they were in complete control of this game. And I woke up, alarm goes off this morning, I roll over and I check sports scores and I was like, oh my God. So I watched the highlights, but I didn't experience it like our Dodger fans in studio did. So let's go ahead and we'll replay it. I'm sorry for Dodger fans who are still awake on the West Coast that haven't been able to go to sleep since that game ended. Here is what it sounded like down the stretch. Clayton Kershaw, I don't know when he's ever going to sleep. I don't know what it's like to be the best at something and simultaneously be the worst at something. There aren't a lot of people who know what that feels like, but it feels as if this is going to be the end of Clayton Kershaw's career in some ways. The Dodgers win 106 games. He comes in an elimination game to try to ensure that they advance to the NLCS where the St. Louis Cardinals await, and this is what happens.
Kershaw's 1-0 to Rendon, swung on, hit in the air to deep left center field. Taylor going back, warning track, at the wall, he leaps, it is gone, goodbye! Bang, zoom goes Rendon on the second pitch from Clayton Kershaw. And it's now the Dodgers 3 and the Nationals 2 with nobody out here at the top of the eighth inning. Here's the pitch. He swings and belts one to deep right center field. Way back. Going. And gone. Goodbye. Halfway up the pavilion. A tremendous game. Tying. Home run by Juan Soto. And this game is all even.
So the Dodgers are six outs away. Clayton Kershaw comes in. It's back-to-back pitches, I believe, right? Gives up back-to-back solo home runs on back-to-back pitches to lose a 3-1 lead and turn it into a 3-3 tie. Then we're into extra innings, and in the 10th inning, the Nationals have loaded the bases. They've got a 36-year-old journeyman up to bat, and this is what happens.
Kelly's one strike pitch. Swinging a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick has done it. They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout. Howie Kendrick with a grand slam here in the 10th inning of Game 5. The Nationals 7, the Dodgers 3.
And that is what happened if you are just now waking up across the country. The Dodgers lost at home a 3-1 lead in the 8th inning and then lost on a grand slam in the 10th inning. The Washington Nationals, the team that couldn't win anything in the postseason with Bryce Harper all those years, Bryce Harper leaves. The first year Bryce Harper is gone, they come in to Dodger Stadium and steal the soul of L.A. Dodger fans. And now it is the Washington Nationals against the St. Louis Cardinals in the NLCS. We wait today, a little bit ominous maybe for the Astros, that both home teams have so far lost their game fives. The Astros playing against the Rays today in Houston for the final game of the divisional series. That is what is to come. We also have an NFL game with the Patriots taking on the Giants. The Giants have almost no players that are actually healthy in terms of skill position guys, but we can get to that a little bit later. First, let me bring in the Dodger crew in a shaken city of Los Angeles. Danny G, what happened?
I mean, they just imploded at the end of the game. We're in control the whole way. The Dodgers didn't get enough runs on the board, though, and I think that all L.A. fans kind of felt that as the game was going along, because early on they score three, but they left base runners. They could have did more damage to Strasburg, because at the beginning of the game, he didn't have a good feel for his breaking pitches. We talked about it. We diagnosed it really good yesterday on the air, in fact, that that's what the Dodgers struggled with. So when Strasburg threw the Dodgers his fastball, they were racking on him. That's how they got off to that 3-0 start. But as he settled in, the Dodgers, they had some opportunities to put more runs on the board. They didn't get it done at the plate. It was tough to watch because you felt it falling apart. Kershaw, he got them out of a jam. Walker Buehler, what's going to be forgotten and not covered much today probably, was just how good Buehler was. He was pretty amazing. Kershaw comes in, gets an important out. Dodger fans at this point are thinking, oh, that's awesome. We're going to see Maeda here. But Kershaw's brought back in. So again, Dave Roberts holding pitchers in for too long. We saw this back in 2017 with Yu Darvish. We saw it last year in the World Series when Rich Hill had that really good start and Alex Wood was brought in, and the bullpen imploded at that point. There were some bad decisions made two seasons in a row in the World Series, and then last night, more bad decisions. When those bases were loaded, Clay, first of all, the bases didn't have to be loaded because Soto was walked intentionally to load the bases. At that point, Dodger fans thought that the lefty Kolarik was going to be brought in to face Soto, because that was his only role in this entire series, was anytime Soto was in at the end of up to bat at the end of a game, they would bring in their lefty specialist Kolarik just to face Soto. He had his number. Soto was 0-3 against him. Instead, Roberts decided to intentionally walk him, load the bases. He kept Joe Kelly in, and then Kelly threw up that meatball that you heard the play-by-play on right there. Grand salami. Got to feel good for Howie Kendrick. Shows you that you can have a lot of errors and come back and be a hero. He was batting .220 in the postseason. He had three big errors in the field and one big base running error. A lot of National fans were actually impressed with their manager for sticking with Kendrick, because he could have been benched. Instead, he's the hero with the grand slam. Dodgers in the bottom of the ninth, they could have won it before it went to extras. Will Smith just missed a two-run homer to walk off, which would have been incredible, all the way to the wall. Instead, nope.
He flipped his bat, too, right?
Yeah, he thought he had it. A lot of Dodger fans did. When he hit it, I was like, oh, that's it. Will Smith walk off, because we've seen so many Dodger walk-offs this past season. I thought it was over right there. Nope. Unfortunately, when it went to extras, my brother and cousin were blowing up the Dodger chat. They're like, That's it. And obviously another thing that everyone started to question immediately, including the broadcasting crew, where was Kenley Jansen? Dave Roberts showed absolutely no faith in his closer. That left a lot of Dodger fans scratching their heads, because if you had no faith in your closer, Clay, then why before the trade deadline did you not go out and get another closer?
Well, to be fair, if they had gone and gotten another closer, it might have been the guy from the Pirates who got arrested for child sex.
You're right. He was one of the guys that, you know,
and
was
rumored. That would have been worked out even worse
been
because
bad.
If you'd been a Dodger fan and suddenly you had it traded for a guy who got arrested for, you know, child sexual abuse, you're like, man, that the trade could have gone. I didn't think it was going to go that way.
You are right about that, but he wasn't the only closer available. And to be fair, they needed guys in the setup role too. You know, instead, it felt like Dave Roberts wanted to put Kershaw in a little bit of a heroic spot. And that's what lit up the lines on AM 570 LA Sports last night after the game in the Dodgers post game. The callers were furious that Kershaw would be brought in such a big moment, that Dave Roberts would once again keep pitchers in for too long, the same way he did with Yu Darvish. Roberto, you can speak to that. I mean, we've seen now three times in a row, Clay, and it's all happened at Dodger Stadium.
I tweeted this out. Kershaw is the death of the Dodgers. Doesn't matter. Since 2009, when he started with the Phillies, he hasn't been good in the playoffs. And it's not going to get better. The thing about baseball is, if you come up and you're good, if you're good in the playoffs, you're good right away. It's not something that, okay, you're going to work yourself into and you're going to all of a sudden be a clutch player. That doesn't happen in baseball. Either you have it or you don't. Like Walker Buehler, he has it. He has that necessary thing that you need in the playoffs to be that kind of player. Kershaw doesn't have it, and he never is. And he's not the same pitcher that he was 2 years ago. So I don't know why Roberts bring him in to pitch in the seventh, eighth inning, throwing 89 miles per hour. It's not going to work. Another guy that deserves a lot of blame is Corey Seager. He was 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. The game always found him when he was up there. He had a chance to bring in Bellinger, and he didn't do it.
Yeah, when I started by saying that they could have done more damage to Strasburg, that's exactly what I was pointing to, is leaving those base runners on wound up killing them in the end. With the bullpen the Dodgers have had this past season, they needed, what, maybe a 4-run cushion?
Yeah.
Just to feel comfortable?
Seager didn't come up big. He was 0-for-8 with his scoring position. And Andrew Friedman deserves a lot of blame, too. He was the one whose biggest signings were A.J. Pollock and Joe Kelly, and how that turned out. Pollock struck out again for the eighth, ninth time in this series. There's a lot of blame all the way around. Roberts deserves a lot of blame as well.
I don't know which city's more crushed, Atlanta or the Dodgers.
It's a tie, except I asked this question last night, and maybe you can answer this too, although I think it might be an easy answer. Is it worse to get blown out with those 10 runs scored in the first inning if you're the Braves, or to be leading the whole game and then let it go at the end like the Dodgers?
I think the way the Dodgers lost, it's less embarrassing to lose like the Dodgers did. It's more crushing.
Yeah, more heartbreak.
Tease. When you give up 10, it's like, well, we just suck. You know, like, man, what a total collapse. And you can just move on.
In 33 postseason games, Kershaw's given up 26 home runs. So
that's tough to do.
Here's another amazing stat from Kershaw. In his career, regular season, he's never given up back-to-back home runs. In the postseason, he's done it twice now.
It was back-to-back pitches, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 2017, he gave up back-to-back jacks in the postseason.
As long as Clayton Kershaw is on the Dodgers roster, the Dodgers are never going to win anything. It's just that simple. They're not going to win.
How long do you think it takes for him to sleep?
Wow.
Did you see the picture of him?
Not just that, but people have put together collages where it's all the pictures of him after each collapse in the postseason. And there are even Dodger haters were commenting saying, I hate seeing this. I kind of feel bad for him.
I don't see how you don't feel bad for him. I mean, the guy's got everything in his life. He's made $100 million. He's one of the greatest pitchers of his generation. I don't know what his home life is like, but I haven't heard any like disastrous things about his home life.
No. He's got a great home life.
Yeah.
He's super giving to the community.
So literally he has everything that could possibly exist in his life.
Except a World Series ring.
His Achilles heel is that when he gets to the postseason, everything seems to fall apart.
Yeah. Somebody on social media last night called him the Tony Romo of baseball.
I don't know that Romo was ever as good as Clayton Kershaw.
That's fair. But I guess their point was he's really, really good in the regular season.
Totally get that. But, yeah. But Romo didn't even get to play in that many postseason games. So it doesn't even...
Yeah, I guess he had that botched hold on the kick.
I don't even know who... Yeah, right. But that... I mean, he didn't actually play in that many playoff games. It's not like he got to the playoffs and lost over and over again. People used to compare Peyton Manning to Clayton Kershaw, but Peyton Manning finished his career with 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a very good analogy. I'm honestly not even sure who you would point to as the Clayton Kershaw of another sport. Maybe Karl Malone and John Stockton back in the day.
That's not bad.
Reggie Miller. But I don't know that those guys were
Patrick Ewing. Yeah.
I don't know that those guys were as good in their sport as Clayton Kershaw has been. I don't know that they had the failure in the postseason, you know, like Clayton Kershaw has. It's more noticeable when a pitcher fails. I mean, it's hard to be John Starks and go out and shoot whatever it is, 3-for-19 in a game 7. I think that was what John Starks shot, but it's more noticeable when a pitcher fails than when other position players fail in most sports. Quarterback is probably the best example, and I can't even think of who the quarterback Clayton Kershaw would be, because you have to be really successful, get into the postseason, and then never win and collapse in awful fashion. That's why, again, the Peyton Manning was the analogy for Clayton Kershaw for several years in his career, but it doesn't fit at all now. So, I mean, if Clayton Kershaw had won a couple of World Series, eventually you could point to it. But I don't even know who the analogy is. Dan Marino? Dan Marino wasn't in the postseason that much. I guess he was in the Super Bowl in 84, right?
Yeah.
But you need to be the best at what you do in order to also have the futility in the postseason.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
So reports are that the game in China for the NBA, for the Lakers and the Nets, is going to take place, but the Chinese have mandated that no players or executives or coaches can talk to the media. So basically, the Chinese are telling them to shut up and dribble, and every NBA player is doing it. Remember when LeBron James was like, I'm not just going to shut up and dribble. Guess what LeBron James is doing in China? He's shutting up and dribbling. Truth is, you pay LeBron James enough money, he'll shut up, dribble, and defend communism. Bravo, NBA. Bravo. You guys are such pathetic, worthless cowards when it comes to actually standing up for what you believe in, that you've managed to bring AOC and Ted Cruz together, that you've managed to unite Republicans and Democrats in agreement that you, my friends, are complete and total fraudulent idiots, as well as having Donald Trump tee off on Steve Kerr in particular and Greg Popovich a little bit for being willing to rip the United States of America to the high heavens. But when China actually steps to you, you won't say a word at all. Here's Trump.
Chinese wrong to be putting pressure on the NBA, sir?
Well, the NBA is a different thing. I mean, I watch this guy, Steve Kerr, and he was like a little boy. He was so scared to be even answering the question. He couldn't answer the question. He was shaking. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. He didn't know how to answer the question. And he'll talk about the United States very badly. I watched Popovich, sort of the same thing, but he didn't look quite as scared, actually. But they talk badly about the United States, but when it talks about China, they don't want to say anything bad. I thought it was pretty sad, actually.
Are you okay, then, with the Chinese government pressuring the NBA over Hong Kong?
They have to work out their own situation. The NBA is, they know what they're doing. But I watched the way that Kerr, Popovich, and some of the others were pandering to China, and yet to our own country, they don't, it's like they don't respect it. It's like they don't respect it. I said, what a difference. Isn't it sad? It's very sad. To me, it's very sad.
I think it's high heat there from Donald Trump, but I think it's true. You might not like Trump, but in the last 40 years, no president has been tougher on China than Donald Trump. And the hypocrisy that he's pointing out here is all these woke, uber-political athletes who have so much to say anytime Donald Trump sends a tweet can't say a single word about China or defend the right of Daryl Morey to speak or stand up and pull their asses out of China and come back here when they're told that they have to shut up and dribble. No, they're shutting up and dribbling. It's unbelievable.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Can anybody disagree with anything I just said? Danny G, does it make it hard for you to care at all what any NBA player says about politics when, or coach or executive, when none of them have been willing to say anything surrounding this entire China mess?
Well, I think back to you hating LeBron James for coming out on issues that he's talked about. Maybe this will be a blessing in disguise, because if he does that now moving forward, who's going to pay attention to it?
I mean, imagine the Lakers win the – let's say the Lakers win the championship. I'm trying to give a bone to L.A. sports fans who are suffering from the Dodgers. And then LeBron makes a huge spiel about how he's not going to go to the White House. Isn't the first question that he has to get asked, wait a minute, LeBron, you were willing to go to China and you shut up and dribbled there when you were told to by the communist dictators there. Why in the world should we care about the opinions that you espouse now that you're back in the United States? In fact, doesn't the fact that you are making the statements that you do just prove how exemplary and extraordinary the rights that you have as an American are? Because if you said anything bad about China and you were a Chinese person, you would disappear no matter how good you are at basketball, and we'd never hear from you again. I don't think most basketball players or most athletes in general are very sophisticated when it comes to being able to explain their political opinions, which is why I've always thought it's so funny that the media has lapped them up like they are modern day political geniuses, when oftentimes rank hypocrisy is so easy to find. But right here with China, I don't know that the NBA could face a more nuclear level detonation of their woke era than what's happened in China. Dub, are you with me here that this is just, I mean, the NBA can go play basketball as much as they want. They can sell their brand around the world. But this idea that they're more than basketball players has been, to me, permanently destroyed by what's happened in China this week.
Yeah, it certainly makes it tough for them moving forward to keep, you know, going on with that idea. And I want to go back to your question last segment. What would happen in the United States if the players weren't allowed to speak to the media, or they were cut off from the media? I mean, there would be an absolute riot. There would probably be a boycott, lockout, whatever you want to call it, by the players. I mean, it would be a total disaster if that happened here in the United States of America, yet it happens there in China, and they just go along with it. They're going to play the game, which I can't really believe they're even playing.
Yeah, this is where Adam Silver has to show that he actually has a backbone. When the Chinese say, okay, we're going to play the game, but your players literally have to shut up and dribble, and they can't talk to the media, and no coaches and no executives. There is no opportunity for them to say anything. You have to be Adam Silver. If you're Adam Silver, you have to get on the airplane, turn around, and fly back. I mean, I understand that there is money at stake, but the NBA is not hurting for money. The players in the NBA are not hurting for money. Mike freaking Conley makes $40 million a year. Dudes like Mike Conley. I'm not trying to take a shot at Mike Conley, but what is he, the 142nd best player in the NBA? I mean, if he can make $40 million a year, the league ain't hurting. The game starts in 5 minutes. I think it's on NBA TV, isn't it? Do we have that in our – I've got to figure out if I can put it on here. They're going to stand for the Chinese national anthem, by the way, as a part of this game. They are being used as props for the Chinese communist government, and they're not doing anything about it. It's a great point.
Game starts in 4 minutes.
It's on NBA TV, is that right?
NBA TV and Spectrum Sportsnet, the Lakers channel.
Yeah, all right. So I'll put it on here in the I'll put it on here in my studio as well. But this is just crazy. And double, you're right. I mean, I would love to see the reaction if that actually happened. If they were told, hey, you're going to play a game here in the NBA today, but no one in the NBA is allowed to talk to the media afterwards because we're concerned about what you might say of a political nature, everybody would lose their minds in the NBA, and everybody in the media would lose their minds. This is the very definition of being told to shut up and dribble, and yet the NBA is doing it, and Adam Silver is allowing it to happen. The game isn't even airing in at all in China. So the benefit of this is there are absolutely no benefit to it, right? I mean, like, it's not as if you're getting watched by a ton of people in China. So I just flipped on the NBA television network. I'm actually a little bit curious to see what, if anything, they say at the start of this broadcast. Eddie, am I crazy here, or is this killing effectively the woke era, the politically outspoken era of the NBA in one fell swoop this week?
Well, I would say no if you're talking about are players still going to be active and speak out on things. They're still going to speak out, but who's going to listen, honestly, at this point after all of this?
That's like, what I mean. Yeah, I mean, because the media is arguing, oh, yeah, like this is so brave of them. Like, how in the world can you argue that an NBA team not going to the White House is brave now after what you've seen the NBA do in China?
Yeah, people will still try and do it, but I don't see how anyone – can honestly listen to that and take it seriously.
I don't understand how Adam Silver, who is paid a ton of money and is supposed to be so smart, the commissioner of the NBA, when he is told, hey, we're going to do the game, but your players are not allowed to speak to the media here. We're effectively taking away your First Amendment rights. Your players have to just shut up and dribble in this game. How in the world he didn't say, okay, I'm calling this game off. We're not going to do this.
He's still trying to salvage this thing, which I don't think it's about money.
Like, yeah. I mean, again, it's, and I understand I'm a capitalist, but at some point you have to stand up for something, right? And if you're an NBA player, you have to stand up for something. And if you're willing to allow yourself to be used by a communist dictatorship as a prop, I don't understand how in the world you don't think, okay, I've got enough money. I mean, LeBron James is a great example. LeBron James has enough money now for not only, like, how many generations of LeBron James's family are going to be taken care of? He doesn't have to make a dollar from China. He's 35 years old. He doesn't have to worry about anything going on in China at all. He can make money in America for the rest of his life thanks to the freedoms that we offer. How in the world does he have such poor advisors that nobody is pointing this out to him? And how in the world does Adam Silver have such poor advisors that nobody is pointing this out to him? I don't get it at all. I mean, it's downright shameful. Just absolutely ridiculous. They just did the Open in Shanghai on the NBA network. Now they are using all sorts of propaganda in the introduction of players with all the best graphics they can bring to bear from China that they're mixing with the NBA. I mean, the NBA has sold their brand to a communist dictatorship, and I'm watching it live right now airing on NBA television. And, I mean, it's just a pathetic display of backboneless, sniveling loserdom by Adam Silver, by the players, and by the executives and coaches. We got a bunch of calls. People want to weigh in. 877-996-6369. Dub, who should we go to first?
We got Tommy in Florida.
Tommy, what you got for me?
Hey, man, great show. Thanks for saying the things that you said. I got 2 points to make. One, has it not occurred to you that Adam Silver, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, that these guys are socialists, which is one step away from communism? So, in effect, they really don't they don't have that much of a problem with China. I mean, that's what they're trying to bring to the United States. And I don't think people really realize that. You know, you said it yourself, LeBron James has enough money. So socialism, communism to rich people doesn't really affect them. My next point is, and this is a question for you, is should you really be watching this program on the NBA network? Isn't that part of the problem as well?
Well, I'm in the news business, so I mean,
if
something happens during the course of this broadcast, it could be a major international incident. I actually want to know in real time that something is happening. But I don't think the number of people who will watch this nationwide is a tiny pinprick of the population. I mean, it's 7:30 a.m. on the East Coast, right? I mean, it's 4:30 a.m. on the West Coast. I mean, a couple of 100,000 people will watch this game, if at all. It's not airing in China. I just want to see, so I can talk about it, the degree to which the NBA is selling out to China for purposes of this game. Thanks for the call. Who's up next?
All right, we got Tim in Texas.
Tim, what you got for me?
Hey, man, I mean, wouldn't this really open up everybody's eyes to who's actually signing the checks and who really owns the NBA and the teams? I mean, I know they're American teams, but behind the scenes, you know, it might be a Chinese signature on the checks of everybody that's, you know, like Steve Kerr, Popovich, and
Look, you follow the money trail in almost every – thanks for the call – almost every possible story. And the money trail is, and I thought Jason Whitlock did a good job. He went on Sean Hannity last night on Fox News. I watched him. Jason Whitlock was on our show, what was it, 2 days ago? And obviously he's got the show Speak for Yourself on FS1, which is doing fabulously well. A huge audience tuning in for that daily now. In fact, I think they had their biggest audience ever. We did too on Lock It In. FS1 is starting to roll in terms of ratings yesterday. But Jason Whitlock's argument is, hey, it's the shoe companies. That LeBron takes his marching orders from Nike because Nike pays LeBron James so much money and so much of Nike's income now is predicated on the Chinese market that LeBron, while he's selling a quality here and all this woke BS that Nike has tried to spiel to us, is actually a cover for them doing the bidding of a communist government in order to make the Chinese people happy. And LeBron is a complicit partner in that. I don't know that LeBron is sophisticated enough to sit around and think about it, but if you really care about American kids, especially underprivileged American kids, LeBron James is powerful enough that he could say, I want my shoes to be made in Akron. I want a factory made in Akron. Every one of the LeBron James shoes I want to come out of Akron. And that means that Nike makes less money. That might mean that I make a little bit less money, but I want thousands of people in America who were asking to pay $200 for my shoes. I want them to show up and be paid and be employed. Instead, LeBron James's shoes are made by workers overseas in Asia who make 20 cents an hour. I mean, literally, they would have to work for months to be able to afford a pair of the shoes that they are making of LeBron shoes that have a quality stamped on them. The reality is LeBron James is a fraud. And what has happened is this Chinese story has exposed him to be the fraud that he's always been, but that most people haven't paid attention to. Who's up next?
We got Andrew in Florida.
Andrew, what you got for me?
Good morning. I was calling in now that Washington has weighed in on NBA versus China. If China's next demand is to fire Daryl Morey, what's the legal ramifications then, like the First Amendment issue here with if he was fired?
I mean, you can be fired by your employer for any number of reasons. You have a First Amendment right to say whatever you would like. But you don't have the First Amendment has to deal with the government, not with private companies. So a private company, you don't have a right to say whatever you want as a employee, right? So people get confused. The First Amendment doesn't apply to the NBA. Now, I don't know what Daryl Morey's contract says. He could have a contractual ability to sue. It seems that the NBA is not going to fire him. And or the Houston Rockets, who employs him, not the NBA, because it would make them look bad. But I think they would like to fire him for sharing his views on the Hong Kong protest, which is what started all this. Who's up next?
We got Mr. Ace in Cincinnati.
Fire away, Mr. Ace.
What is up, Clay? I see that you got a whole lot of stuff that you said as far as like the LeBron James situation. I'm up here live at the barbershop about to get my cut on. And I got to say, I totally disagree. It's easy to stand on your soapbox out there in California and say that the NBA players are wrong. But as you just said, even with Mr. Morey, he can make a statement and possibly lose his job because he's not the owner of the company. LeBron James, yes, he brings in millions and billions of dollars for Nike. He is the face of Nike at this point. But we have to consider the fact, one, they're on foreign soil. Two, what level of protection can the U.S. provide for them? None.
Hold on. You think the China? Hold on. Stop. You think the Chinese government is going to arrest LeBron James and not allow him to leave the country?
If they stood up in China and said something after the Chinese government has told them they can't say anything, then what could happen to
there
them
is
in
a
China?
There is a 0% chance that China is going to imprison LeBron James. A 0% chance that that is going to happen. If it did happen, it would be the best thing that could ever happen to LeBron James's career. Seriously, because it's not as if he would stay in prison in China. It would be a massive international incident. What should happen is Adam Silver, when he is told your players cannot speak, he should say that my players are not playing. We are not going to just shut up and dribble, which is what LeBron James has always said, except guess what? He's shutting up and he's dribbling. So if your argument is LeBron James is a capitalist, he should make as much money as possible, that's fine. Then certainly he can, but you can't argue with me anymore that LeBron James cares about anything other than making money. That's the truth. Who's up next?
All right, last one here. We got Matt in Vermont.
Matt, what you got for me?
Great show. I think it's incredible that that Adam Silver has bungled this thing to the point where a pretty liberal guy from Vermont finds himself in agreement with Donald Trump. Like, to me, that's just a sign of how far off the rails and, like, out of this world the bad decision-making is. As soon as they get told, you know, you can't speak to the media, all of a sudden everybody's sick and we're going home. You know, the NFL makes more money than the NBA. They don't go to China. They don't necessarily need China to be able to pay the players $40 million. But what they've done now is they've lost all credibility. So at this point, even if they come back and they're like, well, we didn't want to speak up there, they've lost all credibility because they should have just come home.
Yeah. I agree with you completely. And by the way, thanks for the call. Let me play this for you again. Donald Trump weighing in, going after Steve Kerr and the NBA players for being so unwilling to actually say anything about China, effectively telling them to shut up and dribble.
Chinese wrong to be putting pressure on the NBA, sir?
Well, the NBA is a different thing. I mean, I watch this guy, Steve Kerr, and he was like a little boy. He was so scared to be even answering the question. He couldn't answer the question. He was shaking. I don't know. He didn't know how to answer the question. And he'll talk about the United States very badly. I watched Popovich, sort of the same thing, but he didn't look quite as scared, actually. But they talk badly about the United States, but when it talks about China, they don't want to say anything bad. I thought it was pretty sad, actually.
Are you okay, then, with the Chinese government pressuring the NBA over Hong Kong?
They have to work out their own situation. The NBA, they know what they're doing. But I watched the way that Kerr, Popovich, and some of the others were pandering to China, and yet to our own country, they don't. It's like they don't respect it. I said, what a difference. Isn't it sad? It's very sad. To me, it's very sad.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Anything we need to do with phone calls, Dub? What's the situation?
Yeah, we got a few more lined up. You want to get to those? Let's start off with Eddie in Texas.
All right, good deal. Eddie, what's up?
Hey, good morning. I just want to let you know I've had to take 3 extra blood pressure pills this morning because you got me so fired up again. I'm a 68-year-old man who has family members and served in different areas, which I know nobody wants to hear that. But the point I'm making, I have a brother also in the oil business. I'm from Houston that has told me some things that have gone over there through the years. And for these guys not to stand up and say, let's just get out of here or make a statement of some positive thing toward this country is unbelievable. They take their dog to the dog parlor who gets treated better than people that are in prisons in China. I promise you, that's a fact.
Thanks for the call. Who's up next?
All right, we got Tyrone in Birmingham.
Clay Travis.
Yes.
No, we have a lot of good football we could be talking about, man. We're all hypocrites when it comes to China. You look like, you sound like you're an iPhone guy. It doesn't matter what brand. It's probably the car you drive, the clothes you wear, all the products, at least over probably 70% of the products are produced in China. Aren't we all whores to China?
Well, thanks for the call. That's one reason why Trump has been so aggressive for being on top of this. I think why he's tried to be so tough from a perspective of standing up to a dictatorship. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know what trade deal we're going to actually be able to create. China has eaten our lunch and they have slapped us in the face and the NBA's continued to acquiesce to it. The difference is, I would say, I am not taking Chinese money. There's a difference to me between buying a product that may or may not be partly made in China and taking money directly from China to endorse their brand of government, which is what the NBA is doing. If China wanted to be the official sponsor of Outkick, I would say, yeah, I don't think we're going to do that. Outkick the coverage brought to you by China. That's what the NBA is doing. Who's up next?
We got Marty in California.
Marty, what's shaking?
Yeah, as a result of Trump's trade policies, virtually every American company in China is 20 to 30% now out of China, and in Vietnam, India, and another number of other countries. Hasbro, the toy maker, is 100% out, all as a result of Trump's policies. We are now becoming detached financially from China because of Trump's policies. And I think we recall Tiananmen Square when there was a tank pointing a gun at an individual Chinese citizen. That tank might as well have NBA written on the side of it now.
Amen.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We're joined now by John Morosi, Major League Baseball insider for Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports as well. He is down in Houston getting ready for Game 5 between the Astros and the Rays. Before we talk about that game, let's talk about last night's games, and let's start with the Dodgers. Unfortunately for people waking up on the West Coast, it was not all a bad dream. Clayton Kershaw comes in, gives up home runs in back-to-back plays. I know we've talked a lot about Clayton Kershaw with you before, John Morosi, but I'm almost at this point at a loss for words.
Well, Clay, good morning, and you're right. It is really hard to begin anywhere else other than one of the great pitchers of our generation continuing to struggle in big postseason moments. Now, I say big moments because he has had some pretty good ones in the playoffs overall. And his ERA is not 10 in the playoffs. It's about 4.5. But it's still has been a story for the Dodgers that Kershaw has struggled in really key spots. Game 5 of the World Series here in Houston in 2017. That was, I believe, when they lost that World Series. Not in Game 7. They lost that one in Game 5. Last year in the World Series also, similar story. And then again, of course, last night. That to me, is a game that we'll be talking about for a very, very long time. And it was not all on Clayton Kershaw. They had one hit with men in scoring position last night. Joe Kelly, of course, was on the mound when the deciding runs were scored. So it was not all on Clayton Kershaw. But it really does signal, I believe, an ending to the notion of bringing in Kershaw as your key stopper out of the bullpen in a playoff series when he's already been pitching out of the rotation. He is not quite the same pitcher that he was earlier in his career, and the playoff lack of success, that storyline remains a big part of his career, candidly. And now the Dodgers were unable to do what the Yankees of 1923 did, which was make it to the World Series after losing the previous two. It's been nearly 100 years since any team has done it, and I do think, Clay, that on a macro level, we have to acknowledge that what the Dodgers were trying to do, make it to a third straight World Series after losing the previous two, was a historically difficult feat, and obviously they were not able to accomplish it.
For the Nationals, they started off this season really in rough shape after Bryce Harper leaves. They end up winning this series the year that Bryce Harper leaves for gobs of money with the Phillies. What can you say about their season so far, regardless of what happens in the NLCS?
It really is remarkable, Clay. I was covering one of their games in the early part of May, and I remember the belief that Davey Martinez was going to be fired any day at that point in time. Any day was the expectation. When I saw them in early May, they had just fired their pitching coach, and the belief was that the manager would be next in the following 10 days or 2 weeks if things did not dramatically improve. But lo and behold, they did. And I give Dave Martinez an immense amount of credit for remaining steady throughout that season and just having the focus to keep the players on the same page. It would have been very easy for them to fracture. They didn't. To your point, I proved something, I believe, as a group. Without Bryce Harper, it makes it for a very poignant story, and the reality is, as you point out, that you're never going to be able to escape that the Nationals' first franchise playoff series win since moving to our nation's capital came when in the year immediately after Bryce Harper left. That is something that I'm sure the Nationals are going to be proud of, and something Harper, I'm sure, is going to be motivated by up the road in a rival city. So it's an amazing story for baseball. And at the end of the day, it also is a big story for Steven Strasburg. He's somebody who 7 years ago was shut down and was not able to help as that team collapsed against the Cardinals in that NLDS. And I do feel on this day there's got to be some vindication for Strasburg, and congratulations to him on a night like that last night, staying in the game, falling down early, similar to the way that they handled the season overall. Down early, but stayed in there, were very resilient as a group, and earned a pretty remarkable victory as a result.
Braves were so achingly close to closing out the NLDS against the Cardinals in Game 4. They come back home in Game 5 and just get waylaid in the first half of the first inning. The Cardinals hang 10 on them. Where does Atlanta go from here? I know they're young. Last year they were ahead of schedule. This year I think people were hoping they would actually win a series at least. They didn't do it, and the way that they lost at home just kind of further fulfills that huge cloud that seems to be hanging over Atlanta October baseball. Your thoughts?
Well, Clay, you're right, and I think that the offseason in Atlanta, while not quite as daunting on maybe a national level in respect to, and in comparison to the Dodgers, there are similar questions there, and in some ways, it's even more acute because one of the big reasons why they lost that series was the fact that their superstar player, Ronald Acuna Jr., did not hustle on a key play in Game 1. And if
for
he
people
had,
who don't remember, he got a single and a ball that he hit off the wall.
Correct, exactly. And so he may well have that play may well have cost them the series. And that's why in baseball you never know when the key moments happen. Sometimes in this case, even in a 5-game series, it was Game 1. And he's already got his long-term extension. They have to find a way to, as an organization, move past that, change the narrative. I think Acuna is going to have to really approach things a little bit differently in that respect and realize the magnitude and the gravity of what happened. He's got a great career ahead of him. He's not going to be defined by one play, but he's going to have to take ownership of that, I think, in a real powerful way to maintain some harmony and accountability in that clubhouse.
Particularly because
he's retiring.
Already been benched for doing this before. So it's not as if this is the first time he did it. And you could at least say, well, it's regular season baseball. There's 162 of them. If you're not going balls to the wall in the postseason in baseball and you've already been suspended by your team for doing the same thing before, it's symptomatic of a larger issue, I would think. That's the concern, right?
Right, and they're losing Brian McCann from that clubhouse, who retired after the game last night. So some of that the veteran leadership that's there is beginning to depart, and now I think Acuña, he has to become one of the people that helps to hold others accountable, and if he didn't do that himself in game one in a big spot, it's concerning. So I'm always a little bit wary of some narratives that take shape during the playoffs. But the way that his teammates responded, Clay, after that game, there were teammates that spoke on the record, McCann, Freddie Freeman, Ozzy Albies, about the lack of hustle, and that to me was a very resounding statement about the way that he had played the game that needs to be adjusted. So for one of the bright young lights of the game, and he is an amazing player, love watching him play, he's going to have to make some adjustments. And that's a very, very hard way, I believe, to enter an off season. And I think Acuña is going to have to make some adjustments.
We're talking to John Morosi at JonMorosi. I think I got that right. You can find him on Twitter there. You can watch him on Fox Sports and Fox Sports 1. You are in Houston. There is one more game 5 left in the divisional round. So far, Dodgers, Braves, both at home, you would think is an advantage for game 5. Both have lost. What do you expect tonight from the Astros? How nervous should they be in their game against the Rays?
Well, this is a toss-up for me, Clay, tonight. This is not a and that may sound absurd because of how dominant Gerrit Cole was in game 2. But the Astros nearly lost that game because their bullpen almost gave it up. Basically, if you look at the Rays and the way they've played, with the exception of Verlander's game 1 start and Cole's game 2 start, the Rays have had a vastly better offensive approach and more offensive success than the Astros have. And Houston has been outscored in this series. They have been out-hit from a standpoint of OPS and batting average. The Rays have, in many ways, played better throughout the course of the series. And Houston needs, I believe, big games from George Springer and Michael Brantley tonight. They've got to find a different way to get the offense catalyzed because the middle part of the lineup for Houston has come to the plate, Clay, way too often with the bases empty, or at least nobody in scoring position. That's the key thing. They have not hit. For all the talk of Verlander in game 4, and listen, he was not great. I realize that. But they scored one run, the Astros did. And that's not going to be enough in the playoffs to win a game. So offensively, I'll look for a better approach. I think on the mound, Gerrit Cole was magnificent in game 2. I expect more of the same. But I also expect the Rays at-bats to be good enough that unless the Astros have a really strong outing against Tyler Glasnow, it's going to be a close game late. And if the game is close late, by the time Gerrit Cole departs, if it's only 2-1 or 3-2, I like the Rays' chances against that Houston bullpen.
Quickly, last question for you. We know the Yankees are waiting out there. Obviously, they would prefer the Rays to win over the Astros, just I would imagine. But in the NL, who do you see as the early favorite now that we know the Nats are going to be playing against the Cardinals?
To me, Clay, the fact that the Nationals have this excellent rotation, I like what they've got. I really do. And I like the fact they've got arguably the best player left in these playoffs in either league, you could argue, with the possible exception of Alex Bregman, and that's Anthony Rendon. And he had a huge hit last night, as did Juan Soto, who was the hero of the wild card game. So in terms of a right-left tandem, Rendon-Soto is as good as there is in the game. Scherzer, I think that was a big confidence-building outing for him in Game 4. And then Strasburg last night was while not dominant, he kept his team in there. And I think winning that game psychologically will do a lot for both him and the Nationals. So I think the Nats are the favorites there on the NL side. And the Astros, Clay, I agree that the Yankees may well believe that they've got a better chance to beat the Rays, but that's a scary team in Tampa Bay. The way they play, it's pretty remarkable to see how Tampa Bay plays.
Outstanding stuff as always. John Morosi, JonMorosi. You can follow him there.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.